Okay, so this is the third time that we're getting together to learn Sefer Shomer Munim, and we're up to Simen Yud Dalet. So, most recently, in the last one, we spoke a lot about, like, what about the fact that the Rambam didn't have access to any of this? Doesn't this prove that obviously it's not true or it's not necessary? And we went through a lot of discussion about that. So in Simen Yud Dalet, Shaltiel. You want to talk to me about being rational, not rational? It sounds like there's a lot of irrational stuff with Kabbalah. So the person, it's a dialogue. The person asking the question is like, I haven't found any good answers. And sometimes, based on the answers they give me, it's like an even stronger question against them. So basically, he's found in his experience, as soon as you start asking questions, and it doesn't make it any more compelling. Tetvav, Yehoyada. There are things you will not understand until you deepen your understanding of the entire discipline. Not every moach, not every individual's brain is able to absorb certain ideas. The wise, holy people are able to absorb certain ideas. However, there are many areas of this wisdom that as long as you're thinking clearly a little bit, they're not foreign. They're very compelling. And if someone says like, this whole thing sounds like really weird and random and doesn't make any sense, it's like it's because you're missing the introductory ideas that we're developing. And this is exactly what we were talking about last time. He spoke about the theoretical case. What if the Rambam would have gotten his hands on his Zohar? Is that he explained, like, the Rambam wouldn't have known what to do with it. It would have looked like just like an absurdity. Like, Hashem's hair and Hashem's eyes and this and that. It doesn't make any sense. If you don't have certain introductory ideas explaining to you, so even if you're a very wise person, you won't know what to do with it. So it doesn't matter how wise you are. Without those introductory ideas, if you were to pick up a work of Kabbalah, you wouldn't know what to do with it. You'll ask questions. It's not the case. Do you think wait, can I just ask you a question? Like as you're walking out of a kiddush, somebody's like, "Okay, can I just ask you a quick question about Kabbalah? Like, why is it compelling like this?" Like, not everything lends itself to be able to answer it. It requires multiple ideas that are developed. And then you understand it. When you learn a discipline, you have to do it properly, foundationally. If you're going to start asking questions before you did anything, you don't start trying to do a PhD in physics, start asking kashas on day one. Like, whoa, you don't know anything what we're talking about. Why don't you like sit and listen? Learn the basics first, then you can start asking your questions. This is not particular Kabbalah, he says. This is true in all wisdoms. Who's the one who develops this idea? Rambam. The Rambam of Avuchim Chelak Aleph Perek Lamed Daled says the following. Those who try to delve into a wisdom without its introductory ideas, without its foundational ideas, they'll have all types of questions and difficulties that don't make any sense. You ever meet someone like that has questions on Judaism? And like, yeah, Judaism doesn't make any sense because like this, and this. It's like, you don't have like a basic education about like how Judaism really works. And you're so confident like in your kashas, like have a little bit more humility. Like, be ready to study, and then you can then ask the questions. Now, again, it doesn't mean that there's no room for questions. With humility, you could say, I don't understand this because of this or that. But this notion that, like, there's a whole discipline, and, like, in 30 seconds, you can kind of slug up the whole discipline because, like, you have akashia. It doesn't work like that, the Rambam says. So he says, Vishar b'halab v'deot mizuyafot ayin shem sherech. The Rambam really develops it. You'll have all types of fakak notions without, if you didn't study it properly. That was before the Moreh Nevuchim. Now the Rambam's introduction. Now the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnayos. He brought a very good parable. The Rambam writes, someone who's very wise in medicine and all different types of other disciplines. He doesn't know anything about astronomy. Someone can be very wise, but they don't know anything about astronomy. ונאמר לו, מה אתה אומר באיש שהוא טוען שגוף השמש, אנחנו רואים כאילו הגולה קטנה, ואם משהו גוף כדור. וגודל כדור, גודל כדור הארץ, 166 פעם, ושלושה שמיני פעם.
If you would ask someone very wise, in contemporary times, it's different because it's a common knowledge, but before it was, if you would ask someone, oh, you're a wise person, you studied medicine, you studied different things, what would you say if someone would claim that the sun is actually like 166 times as big as planet Earth?
That little thing that you see in the sky. Most people, for hundreds of years, thousands of years, you look in the sky, the sun was like this little thing.
וכדור הארץ שמידתה עשינו כל מידות האלה הוא כדור שיש בכפו 24 אלף מיל ועל דרך הזה מגיע לדעת כמה מילים יש מידת גודל כדור השמש.
So the person would say, I know exactly, basically, how the circumference of the entire planet Earth is. I know how much the sun is, and the sun is 166 times as big as us.
אין ספק שהאיש הוא זך הרעיון. Even if he's a very wise guy, שיש סכיל מחכמות כמו שאמרנו, לא נמצא בנפשו מקום לקיים זאת אמונה.
He would never buy it. He would never buy how? Doesn't make any sense at all. Because he didn't study the discipline.
When
he first starts hearing this, the sun's 166 times as big as the planet Earth. This whole thing's nonsense. Doesn't make any sense at all. You're standing on like one little piece of ground over here, and you're going to know what's how big something is millions of miles away. You're able to measure that, know that, as if you're measuring like your own living room? How in the world could you know that? Now again, until you've been introduced to the tools and about how we do that, it sounds like crazy.
ונגרם השמש בשמיים בתכלית המרחק, ואפילו ראיית גרם השמש על נכון יהיה אפשר לנו, לא נסגר אלא זיוויה בלבד, ויחגיע אדם למעלה שיוכל למדוד אותו וידקדק במידתו של שמיים לדקים פרינינג, זה דבר שהוא אין שכמוהו ולא יהיה בלבו ספק על היות זאת טענה בתהילה שתוכל להיות. אבל כשירגיל נפשו בלימוד ספר המידות, וחוכמת משהו ראוי בתבניות הכדוריות ולתם מן ערכים לזה לזה, the more you study this entire discipline, יעתק משם אחר כך על הספר מסודר בעניין זה ודומה אליו, רצון מסבר תכונת הגלגלים הידוע ספר אלמגיסטי, אז התברץ לא זאת טענה. So if he would actually sit down and study the discipline properly and then start reading the introductory works, then he would come to a similar understanding. תשוב לו טענת אמת שאין בו ספק. Then I can answer you. שיש עליה מופת. I can prove it to you. לא יצלו ההפרש בין גוף השמש וכשיעור הזה או שהשמש היא מצויה. The same way you know the sun exists, he'll also acknowledge and the sun is this big. Meaning once you study it, you'll know it. וירגיל שכלו להאמין הדבר שהיה בתחילה מרחיק הרחקה גדולה. And then he'll start becoming accustomed to realize truths that initially he thought were completely foreign. It's something in our generation, just in general, we don't do as much. People have like political opinions about something, we have thoughts about things. More often than not, people don't really change their opinions on stuff so much. What we're saying is, like, you have an opinion about an entire discipline, study it, learn it, you'll have a different opinion about it once you get into it.
Next line, he's like, there, the Rambam says, my example that I gave was dealing with a very wise person who's very learned, but not learned in this area. All the more so if the guy's not such a smart genius. He hasn't, in general, he's not even like an intellectual, cerebral type guy. So all the more so, he's going to be off the mark. אבל היה נישאו מסכל עמו לשכל אשתו. אבל היה נישאו מסכל עמו לשכל אשתו, שנשאלה הוא שאלה משאלות אלוקיות. Not exactly what that expression is saying. Something like, he would travel from the intellect of his mother to the intellect of his wife. Which was it? So it sounds like some put down. So he says, if we ask him some divine question, how Hashem runs the world, he doesn't know what he's talking about. The Rambam gives this whole example saying, that's the way disciplines work in general. That's the way chachmos work in general. Don't start coming, and the way he's going to use it is, don't start asking me kashas on Kabbalah, when you don't even know what you're talking about. Literally, you don't know what you're talking about at all. So many people you'll find, they'll be like, mystical nonsense, whatever. It's like, what are you talking about that you have your kashas on? These are in human disciplines, human created disciplines, but how we come to understand physics and other things as well. The highest of wisdom is possible. If you don't know nothing about it, so quickly you're able to understand these very deep things.
Al titzma im ra'eita b'sefer mekubalim dvarim zarim al datcha. So he's telling this guy who's trying to get to learn more, don't be thrown off if when you start learning certain works of Kabbalah, you start seeing things that seem very irrational. This Hashem's hand is doing this, and this is doing that. These things are mashalim. You have to have the right introductions. Lo tachshod ha-chokhmah v'chokhamim eshut nitamta chokhmatam binatam v'atel logat el karsuleihem. You're not anywhere remotely close to these authors. Be careful. Don't start opening your mouth and talking smack about the big mekubalim. You don't hold a candle near them. But if you want to understand it, you're allowed to. You don't understand, you want to understand it. Good. Learn the foundational ideas, behadraga, in order, in the right form. Then it won't be far into anymore. This is exactly what the Sefer kind of does, which is in a very methodical, foundational type of way, starts going through the different ideas. Fine. Tetzai.
Where does it start?
Yeah, when do the ideas start?
He wants to make sure you're properly prepared for.
So this is introduction, basically, yeah.
Actually, like the past three lessons were introduction.
Yeah, because the mindset that. He wants to make sure you're coming in
with the right mindset. Ask questions, shut up and listen.
But it's not even not ask questions. It's understand that if you don't know an entire language called Chinese, you're not going to ask a question when you're like, "Wait, how does it make sense that that's the third letter?" It's like, okay, one second. You don't know the whole alphabet. What are you asking questions on? He's going through step by step. The first year that we did, the first section he did was establishing that it's clear that Chazal had such a tradition, demonstrating Chazal had such a tradition, and demonstrating that we have the same tradition that they had through the Gaonim, Rishonim, etc. The last one was like, what about the fact that the Ram doesn't have it? What about the fact that segments of Klai Yisrael didn't have it? Doesn't that demonstrate that it's not an intrinsic part? And he demonstrated and explained how it is the case that the Ram didn't have access to it, but it doesn't mean, therefore, that it's any more false. And then showing the compellingness of the other people having it that didn't make it up. The Ramban, they all say they have a tradition
why,
going early on.
Didn't he have access to it?
The Rambam? The Rambam was born in 1144 in Spain, and then within 4 or 5 years in Spain, there was an invasion, the Almohad invasion of Muslims coming in, ready to kill everyone who didn't believe like them, so they had to escape. The Ram spent his life a little bit on the run and ended up in Cairo. He wasn't part of it's like people who live through the Holocaust and then they end up in South Africa or something. They don't have a whole library. They don't have a whole tradition of generations and generations of Rebbeim teaching them.
But he knew about the existence, right?
But not necessarily about Kabbalah. Kabbalah at the time in particular, we spoke about this last week, it was handed down to unique individuals. It wasn't something that was publicized at that point in time. In which case then, it's kind of hit or miss whether you got it or not, whether you happen to have studied from this person or studied from this person that had access to this tradition. And if you didn't, you didn't. So it doesn't mean, therefore, the Rambam is a false... the Rambam, and not only that, though, but we spoke in the past, the Rambam also says multiple times, I don't have a tradition on this, I'm doing the best I can with my intellect. So it's great. He says, if I had a tradition, it's one thing. I don't have a tradition. The other Chachamim tell us they have a tradition.
There was no record Rambam denying that this is not kosher or anything like that.
The Rambam mocks certain ideas that he says these are ideas of foolish people. Foolish people believe that there are demons. Foolish people believe in all these different things. If the Rambam had Kabbalah, I'm not sure he would say that. There are later thinkers that say at the end of his life he did have access to it and he repented and then he became a full-fledged believer in Kabbalah.
The Gemara talks about Shindalids.
Yeah, the Rambam says it's not real. Yeah, that's the point. The Pesukim, the Chazal, they all seem to indicate that. The Rambam's starting point was a very different starting point. The Rambam denies and rejects it, and then he reinterprets all those things. They reinterpret things in the Torah, they reinterpret things in the Gemara, because their starting point is those things aren't really possible. So that's one school of thought in the Jewish tradition. The point of Shemar Munim is to say that was didn't have a tradition. It wasn't like there are two traditions in Klal Yisrael. They didn't have a tradition. They did the best their intellect could do without having a tradition. But we do have an authentic tradition, so we should go with it. Not the Rambam's fault. They didn't have access to it. Fine. Ted Zayn. Shaltiel. Hitra'amta ha'taromet shali inenu al havana pratei kabbalah le'yotem mikata nimna. I'm not getting into the details of Kabbalah, saying that they're impossible, that they can't be. Ki gam anochi yadati shekol ha'matchil lomad yitzchok chokhmah yevo lo sfekot bilbulim. I know that anytime you start learning a new discipline, things that will be hard for you to understand. Actually, zbol sechlo b'tchalad yibadosh inenu mehem yu amitiyim. Aval al klalut darchei Kabbalah. I want to talk about the general approach of Kabbalah. These are things that appear to be irrational. They go against rational thinking. I want to give you an example. I want to elaborate. Before I get to that, this is a major argument
that they say. They say, I don't understand. If you say you have a tradition, so why are there different Svarim that seem to have different perspectives on things? Within Kabbalah also, you'll find different Svarim that seem to debate and discuss different ideas. It's like, I understand, your whole thing is like you have a tradition. Tradition, tradition. We don't have a tradition. The other people don't have a tradition. They're using their intellect. But you have a tradition. It's a little different story. Okay, so how come there's debates in the Mikvalim?
Different than any other group of, like, the whole Gemara debate. Any other part of Halacha's debate. You know, like, why is it unique to...
So, in Halacha, we would say... Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to, the, like, in what ways... The question becomes, you're saying you accept the kernel of Torah Shabbat Peh,
right.
The ideas of Torah Shabbat Peh, the text of Torah Shabbat Peh, but the question is, how do you interpret them?
Right.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
So the question is, shouldn't this be the same way? Okay, so he has to explain. Fine. Yudayin. Be'emet gam ki anuchi lo matzati lo ra'iti shnechalku b'sefer yetzirah, v'lo b'sefer bahir, u'pirkei hechalos b'sefer yetzirah. These are the four dominant works of Kabbalah that he mentioned, or mentioned in many earlier works. I have not seen these four works debate each other on any matter, essential or not. Zulat perush is a pasuk nimsa machloka b'sefer Zohar bin Tamidei Rashbi. Zeh mefarsh pasuk kfi akdama achat, v'zeh mefarsha al pi akdama acheret. Ve'elu ve'elu divrei gemchayim hem. Kishim panim leish haTorah v'mizeh hezek l'chalut hachokma klal. This is the only debate I've seen, is in the Zohar you'll say one rabbi learns a pasuk based on a certain foundational Kabbalistic teaching, and based on that, he'll read that pasuk. Another one using another foundational idea. The ideas themselves don't argue. Just the question becomes, is the pasuk talking about this akdama or that akdama? Right? So no one's debating the essential ideas. They're debating the interpretation of the pasuk according to which idea. But the foundations are still there. So it's similar to what Michael was saying before, meaning when people debate things in the Gemara, they're all accepting the authority of the Mishnah. They're just debating, how do you interpret this? But they're not debating the essential ideas. Now, in Gemara, it could be different because it could lead you to have different foundational ideas.
Right.
If I learn the Mishnah one way, I assume Pesach's like this. And they're according to a different opinion, about a completely different conception of what Pesach works. He says, that's not what's happening here. So if you're talking about those four foundational works, Sefer Tzirah, Sefer Bahir, Sefer Pirkei Chalot, and Sefer Zohar, I haven't found one major debate there. It's important to realize this. Sometimes in life, we generalize way too much. We're like, oh, Kabbalah. Anyways, that's like saying someone saying like, Jewish law. Now, we all know better. Someone would just say like, yeah, Jewish law, this happens all the time, that happens all the time. But it's like, whoa, remember Jewish law? What are you talking about? From the year 220 when the Mishnah was composed? From the 400s when the Gemara was composed? The Rishonim, the Achronim, the rabbis of our generation? When you say Jewish law, who are you talking about? It's important to realize what we're talking about. There's different stages, and there's different patterns to different stages. It's important to be like educated to know what you're talking about. So too when it comes to Kabbalah. Those are the four essential works that are basically from Chazal that we have. Because now there's something else called the Mekubalim Achronim. Now keep in mind, he's living in the 1700s. So Mekubalim Achronim essentially is, he's going to talk about which year is that in. That'd be roughly from the 1200s to the 1500s. That's what he's referring to.
What is he? Achron, Achron?
Yeah, they didn't use those expressions as much, but you'll see. In Kabbalah, basically, there's pre-Arizal and post-Arizal. Arizal, he's going to get to that also. Arizal changed the game completely. So everyone is after Arizal, in many respects, is responding to the Arizal. Everyone before Arizal is a whole different story. It doesn't make any sense, it says, that they're debating whether this wisdom was accepted or not. Exactly what Michael said. You'll find different rabbis in the Gemara arguing about things. We're not going to now doubt the veracity of Torah Shebaal Peh because there's some machloket. We all accept there is a basic tradition. The question becomes, how does the tradition relate to this application or that application? Machloket. Machloket on Pesach. Whether you're allowed to do like this or you're allowed to do like that. Does it mean, therefore, Pesach's not true? Because machloket between Sfarim and Ashkenazim? It just doesn't work like that. So lo mplezen esafek b'mitzvah kabbalat Torah Shebaal Peh, v'nomar shechachmei tamari badu dvarim ahem milibam chas v'chalil. The whole thing's made up. That's it. This machlokes Rav and Shmuel. That's it. The whole thing is a falsehood. Ki haomer ken nivda mekal Yisrael. You're basically like a heretic if you believe that. We don't believe that. Hina anochi agin lacha sibat ha-machloket emtsayim b'mekubalim achronim. I will explain to you now the reasons why you will find certain machlokot in Kabbalah, not in the initial texts, in the later texts in the mekubalim achronim. ואיך נתפתלה מחלוקת אחרי שזכינו על כתבי הקודש של אריזל. And once the Arizal came along, there was no more מחלוקת. דה, Ki machlokin mekubalim etchilu achar Ramban Zal. Very important to realize this historically. He says the machlokin in Kabbalah began after the Ramban dies. When did the Ramban die? I believe in 1270-something, if I'm not mistaken. Asibaita, levishim me'mea go'onim. Ad Ramban, lo ya kutvim inenei chokhmah vezu besfarim, ki mrashay prakim ramazim. It wasn't a industry where you had things that were written down. It wasn't something that you wrote and published. If they wrote something, they wrote it very cryptically, that the only people that would be able to understand it are people who are already in the know. That's the way it was written. The Ramban is commentary on the Torah. Hints multiple times, al derech ha'emet like this, al derech ha'emet like that. But he makes clear, the Ramban already starts getting Kabbalah when he explains the word Breshit. Look at the language of the Ramban when he concludes it. I can't elaborate anymore in writing. The more I hint, the more damaging it's going to be. Because the more I start revealing, the more then people will use their theories and speculation to try to unravel what it is I'm talking about, and they weren't transmitted the major ideas, and as a result of that, they're going to come to wrong conceptions about things. Zelashon from the page Harashba b'tshuva v'asod begadol gibor v'nerayz. Explain Shmona Esrei. No rame od miyadanu kol shekin shaleh oto isha l'shono. He says it's a remarkable idea for me to express it. V'kol shekin shechto b'sefer inyano, to write it. Forget about it. So in the early generations, haray, shaloi rotzim lefareshin emichtav. They didn't want to put things in writing. Keotzem ezet mitzah b'shar sefer mekubalim kadmonim. The earlier mekubalim. Shalo ayu kotzim divrahem ebeor. They never wrote it out the way you have nowadays, where you have like a perish and another perish and another perish. Nowadays you have things explaining things that anyone, any Tom, Dick, and Harry can pick it up and understand it. Kim beremez ubehelem gadol. They hinted that it was so cryptic. When you read that, it's almost impossible not to have confusion. You're going to have confusion because it wasn't written very well. It wasn't written to be elucidating. Unless you're one of those people that you received from your Rebbe the foundational ideas, then when you see these cryptic words, you already know how to unravel it. You know how to unpack it. Achar haramban shenitmata kabbalah pe'al peh. He doesn't say this, but around the time, end of the Ramban, that's when the Zohar was published. And you find a proliferation, more engagement with Kabbalah. What ends up happening is, though, the more Kabbalah becomes published, what ends up happening is, if I want to learn Kabbalah, so I don't necessarily think I have to go find me a Rebbe to teach me and explain to me the foundational ideas. I start picking up books. So that's when all of a sudden the oral transmission got cut off. And as a result of that, everyone started writing what they thought. You want to write it? You're a chacham. You write what you think. Then all of a sudden you have a machloket, because this guy read this text and he starts having this opinion. This guy that read this text, he has a different opinion. Those machloket that you have. The Arizal says the following. Chaim Vital says this in the Arizal. Very important idea. Ki kol hasfarim shel kabbalah shel achar Ramban. Fascinating. The Arizal is in Tzfat again, the year 1571, 1572. He's there for 20 months, he dies. But he changes the entire world in those 20 months. While he's there, he says, all the Sifrei Kabbalah from the Ramban, roughly 1270, until me, 1570, basically, they're not legit. So of course, he's going to get into his apologetics. Like, maybe this one is, maybe that one is, a little bit. They're based on the human intellect. Mustn't based on a tradition. After those, already before the time of the Ramban, the Arizal, who was the major Mekubal when the Arizal got to Tzfat? The Ramak, Moshe Cordovera. The Ramak did a major, major processing, bringing everything together, weeding out what are the true opinions. What's Pardeso? His sefer, Pardes Rimonim. It's like the masterpiece of the Ramak. So he had certain foundational ideas. He brings all different opinions and he goes through them and he analyzes them. Uperesh kavanatam bebi'or rachav and iglani. He starts explaining them. Nasa venatana perushe achornim. He goes through the later opinions of mekubalim. Uberer ocha mitoch apsolus. He took the good from the bad. Vod chiber sefer or yakar, another major Kabbalah sefer. Uperush gadol al zohar v'tikonim v'ayim mehena sefer tzira. It's a running commentary on all of the Zohar. V'acharon chaviv sefer lima. It goes to three different works of the Ramak. Umishme, and it's very important to realize that because Sefer Shomer Munim, in many respects, is trying to explain to us in a compelling way, in a logical way, the foundational ideas of Kabbalah. So he's going to say the Arizal assumes his Talmidim already know these things. That's why in the works of the Arizal, they don't have these things. But they presume that you know these things. So for a good chunk of the work of Shomer Munim, he's going to be drawing on works of the Ramak selectively, because the Ramak writes very, very long and a little bit more complicated. He says he's going to take kernels and say, this explains this idea, and this explains this idea. So he's trying to say, Umishmei da Arizal, it's Mar 11. In the name of the Arizal, they say about the Ramak, Moshe emet v'torato emet, ba'olam ha'blima. Ya'anu g'divrei ha'ramah b'akhtamat sefer pe'alach ha'rimon. What he's trying to say,
what's olam ha'blima?
I don't know enough. There's different dimensions of truth. They say the Ramak was, his whole Kabbalah was on this level, the Arizal was on this level. I don't know enough to understand. So what's important to realize, though, is some people thought, this is what he's addressing in the back of your mind, which is if the Arizal, because that statement was not said with qualifications. The Arizal says everything from the Ramban until him is no good. So a lot of people are like, what about the Ramak? The Ramak lived right before the Arizal. They say the Arizal was at the Ramak's Levaya. This is the famous story where they say that at the Ramak said to his students on his deathbed, at my death, there's going to be, if I'm not mistaken, there's going to be either a cloud or a fire in Shemayim. I think it's a fire, if I'm not mistaken, that'll show where to bury me. And the person who sees that, I mean, it's a spiritual vision, he's the next person, Yeshua. So they brought him to the cemetery. They weren't sure where to bury him. And there he's all said. He sees like a fire in that direction. They should bring the kever over there. And that's when the tradition is. That's when they recognize, because until then, that reason was a little bit more hidden. He didn't know who he really was. That's when they started realizing he's passing on the torch from the Ramak to him.
Literally.
Yeah. Hold on one second, I just finished the thought. So some people might think that because he said unqualified way, from the Ramban to me, everyone's no good. You're like, what about the Ramak? That means that you're completely discounting the Ramak. And he says, don't even learn those books. It works. It means you can't learn the Ramak. So here, he's making a very important qualification. No, of course, he learned the works of the Ramak. That's not even a question. He meant, before that, the ones that are going in different directions. But of course, the Ramak, that's tremendous. Yeah, is a question?
So this whole movement, I don't know, Madonna Kabbalah, or whatever in the world, in the past, I don't know, 230 years, was this nonsense recent before as well, or this is recent development?
And that's much more recent.
No, but I'm saying he's saying.
Was this also exist before? Like,
no, but even that, no. Even then, you had big chachamim, you had big tamani chachamim. They were doing the best. The same way the Rambam did his best to understand Psukim of the Torah and understand Chazals with the tools that he had. So these were big rabbis that did the best they could. He's not saying nonsense, Madonna, Kabbalah Center. No. It wasn't like, oh, people were... No. He's saying they did the best they could, but because there was this rupture in the transmission of the tradition, you'll ask, why is there Machlok in the Kabbalah? It's okay, because you had this Tishtush over here. The whole separate thing is that 70 years before this, we spoke about one of the earlier things with Shabtai Tzvi. That wasn't the same thing as Kabbalah Center Bechlal, but that was taking certain ideas from the Arizal and using it to justify terrible Averot. That was the really, and that's why for so many years after that, Kabbalah became this like dirty word. Anybody that said it, that smacked of it, that smelled like it, that said, get him out of here. And that explains also the Ramchal, why they were so thrown off by him and others. That was more similar, to use it to justify all types of non-good things. All right, so let's finish up over here. Acharkach, but now it's important to realize, and this is where I'm trying to, it's important to realize the steps, the historical steps of Kabbalah. Acharkach he'ir v'zarach ha'me'or ha'gadol, ma'ozu mi'gadol, ha'kadosh k'malachei ha'sharet, kod morenu v'rabbeinu, ha'rav rabbeinu Yitzchak Luri Yazal, ha'mechune v'shem ha'ari. Most people don't realize, by the way, he was Ashkenazi. Luria, his Ashkenazi name. Happens to be that, like, on a whole bunch of things, he thought the Sfarim were right about things. But he actually was Ashkenaz. Uberov chokhmato v'ktushato zachashem itgalei elav Eliyahu zal bechol et. He merited that Eliyahu should come to him at all times. Kmo shehaya mitgaleh l'tanaim v'lamareim, that we find the Gemara, k'di'ita, but Gemara, b'duchtei tuma, the Gemara talks about Eliyahu coming to this guy, this that rabbi. So to Arizal was on that level. Gila l'sitrei Torah v'sodot amukim, he revealed him tremendous secrets. Asher lo neglu b'cholas mizman Rashbi adzmano, from the time of Rashim Bar Yochai until the 1500s, no one had access to these secrets. After him, there's no more machlokot, any of these different opinions and views and whatever it is. He's the real McCoy. He shows up, no one's doubting that this man had supernatural capabilities. It wasn't just supernatural capabilities. You might wonder, like, how do we know? How do you know that you're really so great and grand? Ari Kaplan writes one of his introductory works, like, one of the best proofs you could do to show how valuable what you're offering is when you're able to solve things that no one else is able to solve. So Ari Kaplan writes this, that Ari Kaplan was a super genius. Super genius. Super genius in Kabbalah, super genius in everything in Torah.
He was the same age that Arizal was when the age died. They were both 37.
I think he was 47.
I think he was 30. Okay.
I thought, I don't know. Okay. Something like that. And so he's...
Very young he died.
Yeah. That's not... Whatever. So that Arizal... Arizal, he says, the Zohar was like a locked text. Everyone understood there's something really special going on there. But it was like a work that like no one understood. Like, what's the code to understand this text? Obviously, it's written in hints. And obviously, it's written in a cryptic style. The Arizal gives you the code that then makes sense out of the whole thing. It's like it's self-verifiable. It's not like, oh, you got to trust him. It's like, read his description of the code. Like, he describes there in one of his works, like the nuclear codes. So nuclear physics, somehow. I don't really understand what he's talking about, but like there's certain elements where like once I explain to you the foundational formulas of how things work, then on its own you'll see how like this locked text became unlocked. Like and people were struggling with it for hundreds of years. He comes and boom, opens up the floodgates how to understand a whole major sefer called the Zohar. So he goes on to say, Pam zikash shtar v'etrei, v'eskim shedivrei shneihem amitim b'li naftal v'ikash. Sometimes, if you have a debate between the later Mekubalim, sometimes the Arizal say they're both really true. He's talking about this, he's talking about this, and they're both really talking about true things. Sometimes he says, this guy's right, that guy's wrong. But once he weighs in, that's it. Miyom shneglu ba'olam kitvei Arizal ad hayom hazeh, lo timtza mishi yefakfek v'yachlok al dvarav klal. You will not find someone arguing on the Arizal, he says. Because his contemporaries describe just certain things that like they're, it's unambiguous. It was so clear. The things that they write about him and the works that he wrote, there's nothing to discuss. Everyone could tell that the Ruach of Hashem was speaking through him. They testified, the whole world, clearly he had some divine capacity, divine spirit within him. From the times of Tanaim, he didn't have anybody that mastered and held in his grip Kabbalah. And there are many, many works describing the Shivchei Ari, describing just his, there's just crazy stories. But it's not crazy stories from like, not just one person or two people. Everyone that came into contact with this man has crazy stories about supernatural things and his wisdom and everything else. Now that we've merited to have the writings of the Arizal, so don't give me this argument. Say, who knows the Kabbalah is really true or whatever it is. You have machloket in the Kabbalah, so I don't even know which right way or wrong way. It's like that was a very specific time of history. It was only from the time of the Ramban and afterwards for about 300 years, and then once we got to the Arizal, that stopped it. So that's not really a good argument to contest the veracity of Kabbalah, the significance of Kabbalah, שיש סכנה גדולה להאמין בחילוף האמת, כי באמת הגמור נתפתלה זאת הטענה מכל וכל. The whole argument is gone. על ידי כתיבות האריזל, once you have the אריזל, everything's clear. כי זכינו בהם לאור סתרי תורה, דברים עתיקים, מדבש מתוקים, הערבים לשומעיהם, חיים למוצאיהם, דין וגלי רזיה, דקה זכו להם מנשמעיה, כמו שדרוכים מוכיחים. He says, they prove it themselves. קוראיהם יקירום. Sometimes if you learn a piece of the Arizal sometimes and you see certain things like, whoa, this whole thing is like so figured out. It's such a deep system that is like unpacking the Torah, unpacking the Gemara, unpacking the Zohar. It's like, if you wanted to make this stuff up, you would have had to spend like a century to put this together to like try to, it's so compelling. It says, Kol Ra'eim Yakirum. Anyone who sees it is like blown away. כדברים כאלה אי אפשר לשום נברא להשיגם ושום שכם מידע עלולה על ידי הופעת רוח הקודש. It's clear, it's apparent. Nobody could have written this without Ruach HaKodesh. So today we address this issue. What about the fact that there's machlok in the Kabbalah? Doesn't that call into question the veracity of Kabbalah, the significance of Kabbalah? And he says, absolutely not. It's a very specific time in history, and even that's not even relevant anymore. So we will...